Our opening words today are by Marianne Hactor Cotter. Welcome to this place of possibility. This is love's hearth, the home of hope, a refuge for minds in search of truth unfolding, ever beautiful, ever strange. Here, compassion is our shelter, and freedom is our protection from the storms of bigotry and hate. In this abode, may we find comfort and courage. Here, may our sight become vision to see the unseen, to glimpse the good that is yet to be. Common wisdom exhorts us to live for today, to be in the here and now. As the adage goes, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, today is a gift, and that's why we call it the present. But our theme of imagination calls us to dwell in that mystery, to live in the future, to consider what is possible, to plan, and to create. As Roger Sanford and Pauline Keneally light our chalice, the flame of our faith, let us be mindful of how we serve our ideals, honor our past, invigorate our present, and how we imagine our future. Sean Rodman has a story for us today.
So, can everybody hear me? Is this thing on? All right. Testing, testing. One, two, three. So, thank you very much for having me back to tell another story, because I had an awesome time last time. If you were here before, you might remember that in my house, the way we tell stories is sometimes we tell true stories, sometimes we tell completely made-up stories, and sometimes, most of the time, it's half-true and half-made-up, so it's sort of a half and half. And today is just like that. But the seed of this story, I have to say, comes from Faye. And Faye gave me the seed for this story, and it comes from her book, which is coming out soon and will, I'm sure, be a bestseller. But it's fabulous. So, the story I'm going to tell you is from when I was traveling around the world. Now, do you remember last time when I talked to you guys, I was traveling around the world with my friend Andy. And in my youth, I spent a lot of time traveling around and relying on the kindness of strangers. And I had my backpack and my boots, and I would go to a country, go to a town, and make friends. And those friends, sometimes, would allow me to stay with them for a while, and in return, I would do dishes, or tell stories, or help with the lawn, or help with the kids. And it was great, because I got to learn a little bit about each of those places. So one of these places that I went to, it was near the seaside, and they had a big family. They had 9 kids, and there was a mom and a dad and a nanny, and there was Nanny Talia. And Nanny Talia was very old. And she sat most of the time in a rocking chair, next to the window in the living room, and she'd rock back and forth. And she'd just look out the window, and she'd keep her eyes. She'd be watching this old dead tree, and that's all she did all day. Now, one day, the family said to me, all right, we've got these 9 kids that are going bananas, and we need to go to the seaside. We're going to take everybody off to the seaside, but we can't take Nanny Talia. She's too old. And so, could you look after her for the afternoon? And I said, sure. Seems like an easy gig. No problem. And so, They all got ready to go, but before they left, the littlest kid, who was the wisest one, I think, he came to me and he said, you look out for Nanny Talia. She is the strongest and the fastest and the smartest great-grandma I know. I said, okay, all right. And so off they went. So I sat there with her for a little while and kept her company, and she just sat in her rocking chair, looking out the window. And after a while, I got bored, and when I get bored, I get hungry. And so off I went to the kitchen, and I went to make myself a peanut butter and banana sandwich, because that is, to my mind, the highest order of sandwich there is. And so I was just getting ready and kind of getting all my ingredients ready to getting them all together when there was, ding dong, there was someone at the door. Okay, and so I put all my stuff down, I went to the door, and I opened the door, and there was a delivery man in his brown uniform, and he had a package, and it was a package about so big, and it was very skinny, and it was wrapped in brown paper. And he said, here, this is for Nanny Talia. And I said, Nanny Talia? Oh, okay, all right. Thank you. And I signed for it, and I took it in, and there she was. And I said, excuse me, Nanny Talia, 2 questions. 1, how did you order this thing when you've been sitting in the chair the whole time? And 2, what would you like me to do with it? And she said, oh, never you mind. Just Just put it right here. Okay, all right, so I put it down. And I went back to the kitchen to work on my sandwich, which, as I said, was a peanut butter and banana sandwich. And the key to that is the peanut butter. You really need a high-quality peanut butter with no added sugar. And then I thought, wait. I should check on Nanny Talia again. So I went around the corner, and I peeked around the corner, and I looked. And there she was, and everything was fine. She was sitting in her chair with the package beside her and a shovel across her lap. And I thought, okay, that's weird. So I went around, and I said, excuse me, Nanny Talia, two questions. One, how did you make it over to the garden shed and back again to get the shovel so fast? And two, the shovel? What's up? And she said, oh, no, never you mind, dearie. Okay, all right, good, fine. So I went back to my peanut butter and banana sandwich, which really the key is not the peanut butter, it's the banana. Because if you get a banana that isn't quite ripe enough, it's like an old sock, and you don't want that. And then I realized that something was missing, and it didn't have to do with my sandwich. I realized that the sound from the living room had stopped. And I peeked around the corner, and there was the rocking chair, but there was no Nanny Talia, and there was no shovel, and there was no package. And I went, my one job, and I failed at it. So I ran to the living room, and I ran to the glass, and I put my face against the glass, and I looked out, and I looked out the window, and there was Nanny Talia. And instead of the rear sound, now there was a, because she was shoveling. She was digging a hole in the backyard, and she was up to her knees, and she was going at it, and digging away. And I have to pause, because at this moment, I was particularly alarmed. Because in my limited experience with people who are extremely old and holes in the ground, usually it's a one-way relationship. So that was bad. And so I ran outside and I said, Nanny Talia, two questions. What is going on? And what is going on? And she said, oh, never you mind, dearie. And I said, no, I'm minding. So what is going on? What is that? And she said, all right, will you bring the package over here and I'll let you help. Okay. And so we unwrapped the package and it was a tree. It was a little tree, an almond tree, about yay big. And she said, now you can help me plant it. I said, okay, all right. And so together we planted the tree. And as we planted it, she explained what was going on. And she said that every day, she sat in her rocking chair and looked out at her garden, and she looked at the old tree at the end of the garden, and it was an old, old almond tree. And she said, my great-grandmother planted that almond tree. And when I was a little girl, I played in the branches. And when I was a young woman, I took the pink blossoms and I put them in my hair. And when I was a mother, I took the almonds off the tree and I roasted them and turned them into cookies and gave them to my kids. And I said, oh, I get it. So you want to plant this tree so that you're able to climb it? Or she said, no. She said, this tree is not for me. This tree is for my great-great-grandkids and for their kids. This tree is for the future. And I said, you know what, Nanny Talia? I think you may just be the strongest and fastest and the smartest great-grandmother I know. So, that was one of my favorite tricks.
And hold in our hearts those among us who are dealing with challenging issues, loss, illness, or any of the other circumstances which we humans find painful. Our hearts are gladdened for those among us who are finding love, success, recovery, or otherwise just feeling good. We're glad you all came here to be together in this beloved community. May your joys multiply and your sorrows divide. Blessed be. Our service today revolves about missions, particularly reimagining the mission of a religious community. Let us focus for a time on the mission of this religious community. Would you now look in your order of service for the responsive reading of our church's expanded mission? Please briefly scan the first three sections and choose one that speaks most closely to your heart. And then read that section aloud when we come to it. We will all read the final section together. Let us begin. We are a welcoming community, energized by the diversity of beliefs, identity, and experience that each person brings. We encourage our children's curiosity and nurture their open and loving nature. We gather to explore sacred mysteries, to sing of our longings and our blessings, to be still and listen. Strengthened in spiritual growth, supported in diverse community, we strive to transform ourselves and heal our world through compassion and action.
I now invite you to take a few moments to be still and listen. Please sit in a meditative posture, whatever is comfortable for you. Become attentive of your breathing, your in-breath, your out-breath in this present moment. I invite you to reflect again on the mission statement which we have just shared. And perhaps to focus it a little, you chose one expression, to go a little more deeply with that expression and to think of this past week. And was there one action of the last week that enfleshed this mission in your own life? And as you look to the week ahead, will there be one or more actions that enflesh the mission?
Good morning, everyone.
And thank you for your kind invitation. Thank you, Liz, and welcome. It's really a joy for me to be with you this morning. And in fact, reflecting on the experience of the Sisters of St. Anne through the lens of your April theme, imagination, has been a rather intriguing and insightful experience for me. And as often is the case when one is teaching, you feel that as a teacher, you learn more than your students. And sometimes I think that when asked to speak on a particular topic, the reflection one is invited into to prepare for that is a gift for the person speaking. So thank you. I was intrigued also to see the synchronicity between phrases of your mission statement and ours. So just taking one expression from yours, strengthened in spiritual growth, supported in diverse community, we strive to transform ourselves and heal our world through compassionate action. And from the Sisters of St. Anne, as re-articulated for these times in 2013, as gospel women, we manifest God's love for all creation. We commit ourselves to be a presence of hope, compassion, and justice at the heart of our church and world today. In collaboration with our sisters and brothers, we open up new pathways with God and in fidelity to our mission. So you see some of the same words even, and certainly some of the same sentiments intersecting there. In the last 40 years or so, it seems that every organization, not-for-profit as well as for-profit, has had to develop a mission statement. Prior to that, those of us in religious or faith-based organizations thought it was only we who were on mission, and now we discover that everybody is. And of course, the mission statement is supposed to provide you a focus with your activities, all your endeavors, and then you develop all kinds of plans to make that mission real. We who have belonged to what might be considered or called, sometimes called the long historical organizations or movements, have always known that although there is an essential mission to our organization, it needs to be revisited and reinterpreted and re-articulated at regular intervals and according to the changing times. I meant to ask you, Liz, when yours was developed and when it was last, about 5 years ago, so similar to ours. So this requires both personal and collective discernment. And the Sisters of St. Anne within each province or region and in our wider congregation do this every 5 years. So I think another similarity, I'm assuming this, between your understanding of mission and ours is that we consider it to be both corporate or collective as well as individual, or what each of us is called to live in our own lives. So for us, the corporation or province of the Sisters of St. Anne has a mission, which we strive to enflesh through our ministries and use of resources. And each of us personally enfleshes or lives the mission according to our personal gifts and personalities in our various milieu. So these are the two dimensions I'm going to speak to this morning. Forgot to look at the time when I started. Let me speak first about our corporate mission. Some of you may have read the recent article about us in the Good Friday edition of the Vancouver Sun. Actually, I could have just brought that and said, here it is. I think Douglas Todd captured well this aspect, the corporate aspect of our mission. As many of you know, our first four sisters and their lay companion came to Victoria from Quebec in 1858, a mere 8 years after the Sisters of St. Anne were founded to teach children in rural Quebec. Can you imagine what that was like and how they had to reinterpret the mission when they arrived here in Victoria? Their original home and school remains on the grounds of the Royal British Columbia Museum. Can you also imagine the courage, faith, vision that it took for them to even roll up their sleeves and begin? Within a couple of decades, the works of these sisters and those that followed them flourished to include St. Joseph's Hospital, schools on Vancouver Island and the mainland, and health care and education facilities as far away as Alaska. Then, after the Second Vatican Council, when the whole Catholic Church went through a reinterpretation of its mission, that was in the 60s, according to the historical moment in which we live, we Sisters of St. Anne started to move away from institutionalized mission to become more involved in various forms of adult education, spiritual accompaniment, and processes leading to personal growth. At this time, 50 to 60 years later, I've been called to provide leadership in a time of diminishment, not growth. With 32 sisters, when I entered the community, we were almost 300 in this region alone. We're now 32, with an average age of 82. We have entered what we call a process of completion. We recognize that we, as Sisters of St. Anne in this part of the world, will not continue. It's one of those tasks that one faces in the later stages of life of recognizing your mortality. And we as an organization have recognized that. So just as individuals nearing the end of their life on Earth need to bring certain things to completion, psychologically, socially, financially, so do we as an organization. Some people might say we're in palliative care. I've heard that. As I don't feel that myself. As I oversee the completion of what was begun in this province 158 years ago, I often think of those first pioneer sisters, and indeed I pray to them. With profound faith, courage, and determination, they planted seeds, not knowing what would grow or how. What a great story Sean told as an introduction to this. Wasn't that fabulous? And I'm sure many of us can identify with that individually, and certainly it set the stage. I almost said, well, I don't need to speak. But of course, how can I pass up the opportunity? So, although in a very different time, we do the same, plant seeds, not knowing how they would grow or will grow or how, as we anticipate there being no Sisters of St. Anne in this part of the world. Our pioneer sisters responded to the very real needs of their times, some of which are now met by other sectors of society, but many of which still remain. As we look to the future, we realize it will not be us, but other individuals and organizations that will respond to the needs of the most vulnerable in our midst and strive to bring about a more just and caring society. To a certain extent, we obviously grieve the loss of what was, but mostly we give thanks for and celebrate it as we prepare for a very different future. Doesn't mean, however, that as long as we are here, we do not strive to live our mission. Rather, it has been our goal to bring our province to completion in a way that continues our mission, that is, that continues to challenge injustices, to foster care of our world, to promote peace and nonviolence, and to be a beacon of hope and encouragement in a world in which there is so much despair. To do so, we link with other like-minded organizations and support them in their endeavors. You'll notice in our mission statement, I refer to in collaboration with our sisters and brothers, we open up new pathways. We mentor the young, and we provide resources for their engagement. And to ensure core aspects of our mission continue when we are no longer here, we have made significant resources available to organizations with which we have worked. You may have noticed in the last year or so there's been a certain amount of publicity around some major endowments that we have established. You as an organization are not facing a time of completion as we are. Perhaps, though, there are links that you can make with our experience in the area of adaptation and reinterpretation according to the times. I'm going to go out a bit on a limb here, but Liz shared with you some of my background, so you'll know where it's coming from. I understand your theme last month, was it last month it was reconciliation? Yeah. And that someone from Cairo spoke about the calls to action of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was set up to look into the Indian residential school. I merely put out to you, as I do to every group to which I speak this year, is there something that fits with your mission there in their calls to action that calls forth something from you that can be healing and transformative? I believe that every organization in Canada needs to look at the calls to action and to at least the summary report and see what they are invited to do to help overcome this grave historical injustice and with an injustice and a racist attitude, in fact, that continues to this day. I mean, just about every time we open the newspaper, we see it. And to prepare a better future for all of us in this country. So that's my little plug on the corporate. On the more personal level, we have a conviction that we, Sisters of St. Anne, that we are on mission no matter our age or infirmity. This is in all our documents going back decades. To illustrate this, I'm going to share just a few stories from the personal lives of sisters. Closing St. Anne's residence, that some of you knew it was on the property at Queenswood, where we had our home for our aging and infirm sisters, closing it in 2012 was the most difficult decision I've made as leader. You can imagine the research into options, the conversations, the soul searching, and the prayer that were needed on the part of each one of us, those of us in leadership, and especially those who would be most affected. For them, it meant leaving our Sister of St. Anne home and life in a community with other sisters to live in a public facility. At one meeting, one of the sisters who was assessed to go to Mount St. Mary Hospital stood up and said, "I've decided to think positively about this move. I'm seeing it as being sent on mission. The way we used to be sent to a particular school to teach or a hospital in which to nurse. We're being sent on mission to Mount St. Mary. God will be with us as he has always been, and God will continue to work through us as he always has." Her comments not only touched me deeply, they brought light and new hope to many in the room. Some of you know Sister Anne Thompson. I think Roger, you and Pauline probably knew Anne, who was involved for many years in adult religious education throughout Vancouver Island. In 2008, Anne was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and is currently at Mount St. Mary Hospital. Her disease progressed quickly, and although I've been one of her closest friends for over 50 years, she doesn't know me. She speaks only in words that are not connected with one another and don't convey much meaning, except from time to time, she says, "Thank you." A few weeks ago, I was speaking with one of the volunteers at Mount St. Mary about the sisters who are there. She has been going there regularly for many years, and just out of the blue, she said to me, "My favorite sister there is Sister Anne. I never knew her before she became ill, but I love her so much. There is something about her that makes me smile and lifts my heart." And I thought, always on mission, no matter our age or infirmity, even now, Anne is a presence of life and brings joy to others. Two examples from the lives of two sisters who died recently, and I see two people here who knew Sister Lucy Dumont very well, and there may be others of you as well. Lucy became a well-known person in Victoria because into her 80s she was walking in the charity marathon to raise money for Mount St. Mary. She began walking as therapy after she almost died of complications to her Parkinson's disease in the early 2000s. So what some would see as a major setback and block to doing much more. She walked everywhere and talked with everyone, walking, gazing lovingly on those she met, praying for them as she walked by, and chatting with some of them became her way of living her mission of caring and compassion. She often spoke with me about these encounters. When I visited her in the hospital not long before she died, a businessman would give her donations for the marathon was there. By her going to ask him for money and engaging him in conversation, they had become friends. Through tears in his eyes, he told me how much his friendship with Lucy had come to mean to him. I thought even asking for donations can be a form of ministry. Now, those of you who go out and ask for ministry, isn't that astounding? But it's the personal engagement and the interest in the other person and the supportive words for the other person that, and just the caring and compassion that would come through. The evening before a sister's funeral, we have a prayer service in which those who are present are invited to share a memory. Sister Josephine Carney was 96 and had been legally blind for over 10 years. So she died just at the end of February. Nevertheless, until the last couple of years, she would take the bus on her own to Vancouver to give talks on spiritual matters. At her prayer service, a man hesitantly came forward to speak, someone that none of us knew. With a bit of encouragement, he told his story. He sold tickets at the bus depot, and Sister Jo would give him money in an envelope for her ticket. He was going to count out the change for her, and she said, "No, you don't have to count it out. I trust you to give me the correct change." He cried when he told us that, because it meant so much to him to be so trusted. He felt deeply connected with her and always felt uplifted after she had been there. When I spoke with him later, he said he had no idea who she was or that she was a sister, and he didn't know why she had stopped taking the bus a couple of years ago. When he saw her picture with her obituary in the paper and read about her life, he was astounded and felt he just had to come that evening to pay tribute to her. So little is needed to heal our world through compassionate action or presence. A word or a look. A conversation on a bus. One of our sisters who took the bus all the time until not long before she died talked about her bus ministry. Talking with people at the bus stop. Encouraging people. Reaching out to the end. Daily, each of us can be that presence. And so I ask you, are you satisfied with how you live your mission in your own daily life? Is there something you need to do in order to imagine doing it differently? Our world and its inhabitants call out to us to live fully our mission, both collectively and individually. These times call us to reimagine how to do it, to not rely on the ways of the past, but to do something new. And if the ways of the past still fit the needs, but for various reasons we can't do them anymore, it doesn't mean we just give up. We have learned that when faced with what we can't do, when faced with our personal and institutional limitations, we don't need to see these experiences as blocks to life. Think of Lucy or Josephine. Rather, they are invitations into something new, and perhaps even fuller life than we might have experienced the old way, even fuller life than we might have imagined. We are propelled into a process of both openness and discernment as we take steps along new pathways and allow the path to reveal itself. So as I close, I invite you just to take a moment to reflect on your enfleshment of both your collective and personal mission. To be grateful for the gifts you've received through that mission,
and to be re-inspired to move forward with it. Thank you.
Our closing words today are adapted from the work of Michael Schuller. We have reached the end of this time for the gathering of memory and for letting the imagination play with future possibilities. As we leave this place, our separate paths diverging, meeting, merging, in the unending quest for love more perfect, for meaning more sufficient, for life more abundant. Is this the ending to be an ending, or merely the prelude to a new, more glorious beginning? I pose the question. In your heart lies the answer. And now, carrying that question, and Sean said it, and Sister Marie said it, these are the words from Martin Luther. Even if I knew that tomorrow the world would go to pieces, I would still plant my apple tree. Synchronicity.